is in the matter of Spoonover.
My name is Edward Italis, and I represent Fred Schoonover. This is a bankruptcy case filed in the Southern District of Illinois for the Honorable Kenneth J. Myers. In that case, the debtor sought the avoidance of a lien, and it was denied. The district court affirmed it, and we're here today. And I'm asking this court for a remand with instructions that the lien that an order be entered avoiding the lien. The sole issue that I'm presenting today is whether property exempt by operation of Bankruptcy Rule 4003B for failure of a party to object to that rule must again be examined and proven as exempt in the context of a Section 522F lien avoidance motion. And I don't think that there's any factual...
What is the significance of this? Since the district court held that as a matter of law, the property could not be exempt because it is not currently in a pension plan. So what difference does the burden of proof or persuasion or and so on make?
Well, Your Honor, because the property was listed as property of the estate, and then under Schedule C was listed as exempt property, and there was no objection to the listing as exempt, and therefore under the Supreme Court ruling in Taylor versus Freeland and Kahn's, it is, in fact, is deemed to be exempt property. Maybe I don't understand your question, sir.
Evidently not.
The case involves a judgment for $100,000 that was entered against Mr. Schoonover in the First Judicial Circuit. Mr. Carr obtained the judgment and sought execution of it by service of a non-wage garnishment upon summons on Mr. Schoonover's bank.
Can we go back to Taylor for a minute?
Yes, sir. Yes,
because Judge Gilbert raised a nice point about the difference between this case where we have a dispute between a debtor and creditor, and Taylor where the issue is between the trustee and the debtor. What's your response?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think that makes a difference. I think that the rules provide that an interested party may object to claimed exemptions, whether it be a creditor or the trustee objecting. I think that to answer, if I might, that the difference in this case is that it arises in a lien avoidance context. And, of course, under the lien avoidance provisions of the code, one of the elements that the debtor must prove is that it is an exemption to which he is otherwise entitled. But neither the code nor the rules makes any distinction between the trustee raising an objection or a creditor.
Could you just help me with this? There are references in the brief to the late wife of Mr. Schoonover, and at other times there are references to her testimony at the hearing held by the bankruptcy court.
He was remarried, Your Honor.
Well,
his wife passed, and
So it's the new wife that was testifying?
She did, in fact, testify at the hearing of the matter. The bankruptcy was filed, and these Mr. Carr and Mr. Brandon were duly listed as creditors, and the properties, the assets were listed on Schedule B and exempted on Schedule C as proceeds from Social Security and retirement accounts. No timely objection was indeed filed. There was a 30-day rule, and there was no extension sought for the 30 days. The debtor thereupon filed a motion to avoid the lien on the account. Chapter 11 of the United States Code, Section 522L, mandates that the filing of a list of exempt property and provides that unless a party objects, the property claimed as exempt on said list is in fact exempt. Bankruptcy Rule 4003B allows creditors and trustees to 30 days to object to the claim exemptions from the date of the 340, the meeting of creditors pursuant to Section 341. The rule also provides for extensions of the period of time if application is made during that time. I've already mentioned the Taylor versus Fulham and Kranz Supreme Court decision. That involved a debtor resisting a motion for turnover of property, a bit of a different factual situation. But likewise as here, there was property that was claimed as exempt and was later determined that the debtor was not in fact entitled to the exemption. There was no objection made. And the trustee in Taylor argued that Section 522L and 4003B do not preclude a good faith test of the claimed exemption. And of course the court rejected that argument and followed the clear meaning of the provisions, or a literal approach. The Supreme Court endorsed the idea of finality in spite of any harsh results that might occur from that. Furthermore, the court said that to counterbalance any potential abuses, there are provisions in the code and rules for various sanctions and criminal offenses that can be invoked to protect any misdeeds. Of course, later then this court took up the identical issue in matter of Kazi, K-A-Z-I. In that case, the creditors and the trustee objected to a claimed exemption in pension funds, but the objection was indeed after the 30-day period. And this court, in citing the Taylor case, held that a failure to file a timely objection to an exemption claim is an absolute bar to consideration of the merits of the exemptions. And the Kazis received a $430,000 windfall because of this, which gives more emphasis and more strength to that position, I think, that it's an important rule of law. And this court stated under Taylor that once the 30-day period expires, a debtor's claimed exemption cannot be challenged. And of course, then this court then stressed the finality that Taylor attempted to place in the forefront.
Was Taylor relied on, by the way, in the bankruptcy court or the district court?
I think that Judge Myers felt that the propriety of the exemptions again had to be proven in the.
I'm asking a concrete question.
Yes,
did you rely on Taylor in the bankruptcy court or the district court?
Yes, sir.
And where can we find this?
I think that the district court brief will, should have reliance upon Taylor. And I'm not sure, I can look, but I'm not sure if it mentions the Kazai case at all. The final case I would like to discuss is the Buki case. It's a Northern District of Illinois case. And that considered this issue square on the facts with the ones with the instant case. In that case, it arose in a mean avoidance context. And Judge Schmetterer held that once the 30-day deadline passes, the exemption is incontestable on any grounds. And he relied upon the finality of expressed by the Taylor and the Kazai courts, and that to try to address the problems with the 522F, Judge Schmetterer reasoned that the exemption is otherwise proven by the rule in Taylor, that the application of the Taylor rule deems this exemption to be appropriate. And if Mukey then goes through talks about the different, the split in opinion, but concludes that this court has decided the matter and that it is bound by it. I think we have the same facts here, Your Honors, that we have an attempted lien avoidance and that it's the exemptions were listed, and that I would ask the court to then remand the case with instructions. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Brandt.
May it please the court, Mr. Dallas. I represent Edward Carr, who's the gentleman who has the judgment against Fred Schoonover. And the issue came up in the way that the bankruptcy court, in considering a lien avoidance motion made by Fred Schoonover, required Fred Schoonover to show that he was entitled to have the lien avoided.
When was the motion made? Was it made within 30 days?
Of what, sir? 30 days of what?
Of the filing and notice.
No, there was a petition filed, and then several months afterwards, there was a motion to amend the petition to avoid the lien, and that's when Mr. Carr objected to that, and then a hearing was held upon the debtor's motion to avoid the lien.
What answer do you have to the argument based on Taylor? I noticed that your brief doesn't even bother to mention Taylor.
Yeah, I mean, Taylor was involved a trustee in not filing an objection. I represent a secured creditor.
And why does the difference between a trustee and a creditor matter for purposes of 522L of the code?
Well, I think that under 522L is where the debtor is trying to determine what assets are going to be available for the benefit of unsecured creditors, and that would bring in the involvement of the trustee, whose interest would be to gather the assets for the estate.
Yeah, but look, is there some language in either 522L or Bankruptcy Rule 4003, which were the matters addressed by the Supreme Court in Taylor, that distinguishes between what's required of the trustee and what's required of creditors?
Well, I don't know if I'm answering your question directly or not, but if I'm understanding what you're asking me is, how does the involvement of the trust, of the secured creditor become important in raising a question about exemption?
In general, what's important about secured creditors? I'm asking a concrete question about Section 522L and Rule 4003. The Supreme Court says in Taylor Rule 4003 affords creditors and the bankruptcy trustee 30 days to object to claimed exemptions. And it then goes on to hold that the time provided by Rule 4003 cannot, under any circumstances, be exceeded, and that objections tendered after the time provided by Rule 4003 are irrelevant. So unless there's some basis for thinking that there's a legal difference for purposes of 522L and 4003 between creditors and the trustee, it looks like Taylor is governing. Now, of course, that leaves me with the vast puzzlement why you think it unimportant to discuss Taylor in your one-page brief.
Well, Your Honor, the importance to me was the wording that a secured creditor does not have to file a claim in bankruptcy, and their lien will survive the bankruptcy. I believe it's only when the debtor, or it could have been a trustee, but in this case the debtor seeks to avoid that security interest in terms of a judicial lien, that the creditor, security creditor, has to come forward and defend his claim. And I think that's what Mr. Carr did, and I think that he's entitled to do that at that time.
Why wouldn't you, just to be on the safe side, want to act within 30 days and file an objection to the claimed exemption?
Well, Your Honor, when Mr. Schoonover filed his bankruptcy, we had no reason to know about the source of his funds that were not, in fact, what he alleged on his exemption. That came through some other information about his selling of his wife's antiques, and that is the basis of our objections. We learned that, in fact, the $76,000 in the bank did not come from his the things he set out, which would have been exemptions, such as his veterans' benefits, his Social Security, and arguably, at least from his point of view, his retirement plan. But it was after discovery that there was other assets that were in the bank account that we objected to the exemption. And
let me now see then if I understand the timeline from your perspective. How soon after the lien avoidance request was made did you file your objection?
30 days.
Exactly. Do we know what those dates are?
Well, no, I don't know the exact date, but it's 30 days, giving a weekend here or there, and I don't know exactly what...
Look, in the legal system, 30 days, given 7 days here or there, will make all the difference in the world.
But my understanding is if the filing deadline occurs on a date the court's not in session, you have until the following regular day, which would be the Monday, to file your claim. In essence, the bankruptcy court required the debtor to show that those items were in fact either retirement or Social Security or veterans benefits. He testified that they were, for the most part, the result of selling his wife's antique collection. And when the bankruptcy judge heard that, he ruled that there were no avoidance of the judicial lien, because that was an area that was not exempt to him. And he required the debtor to file an amended Chapter 13 plan to include the $76,000 that was in the bank, subject to our non-wage garnishment. Then the debtor appealed instead of filing an amended plan, and that was affirmed. And then we're here now on the question of who has the responsibility or the burden of proving that the lien should be avoided. The bankruptcy court, with the district court agreeing that it's the responsibility of the debtor to show that, and not the secured creditor. So we simply ask the court to affirm the rulings of both the bankruptcy judge and the district court. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement. Our next case for